Growing a small business has never been easy. So, how can we build our companies and shortcut the learning curve? By getting advice from the people who've done it before. Everything you need to grow your business is right here. I'm Simon Lader. Welcome to the conference room. Good afternoon and welcome to the conference room. I'm joined by Aaron Ansari. Now, Aaron is the Chief Revenue Officer of Rangeforce, a leading cybersecurity SaaS vendor. Before that, he was VP Sales of Cloud Conformity until they were acquired by Trend Micro in 2019. And before that, served as Sales Director for FishMe, where he was responsible for more than doubling its customer base. Before his career in sales, Aaron served as the Chief Information Security Architect at BMW Financial Services and held IT security and risk roles at JP Morgan Chase, Cardinal Health and Huntington Bank. And for more than a decade, he also taught computer information sciences and management information systems at Franklin University in Columbus, Ohio, which is also his alma mater. Aaron Ansari, thank you so much for joining us and welcome to the conference room.
Thank you very much. And what an energetic and wonderful introduction. I don't know that I have the energy to match that right now, but I appreciate it for sure.
I'm sure you have. Anyway, every hero has an origin story, and you're the hero of our story. So, Aaron, how did you get from graduating from Franklin University through this illustrious career to becoming Chief Revenue Officer over at Rangeforce?
Sure. As you said, everyone has a unique way and a unique path. I think the real answer lies within, right? With a motivation and desire to constantly continue to bring value and be rewarded in my professional career. And that constant desire and drive to bring value and be rewarded has led me here to Rangeforce. But I think more traditionally or more true to the question of what you're asking, the path is sort of twofold. And one is a security practitioner path, and the other is a vendor or, you know, kind of that security provider path. And when you take both of those and sort of merge them into what I've done, you have a very holistic perspective of the security industry, the security buyer's journey, the security seller's journey, and just sort of information security or cyber as a whole. And that's really what led me or brought me to here, is having the perspective and that holistic approach of the enterprise and the enterprise experience, specifically in financial services, as well as the security partner or security vendor and their experience as well.
Right. Okay. So something I'm really intrigued about is your, having read up about you and obviously spoken to you before, as you alluded to just there, and we referenced in your bio, your career thus far has almost been like a story of two halves, where you started out, if you like, hands-on IT security risk role as a practitioner, okay, and then moved across into sales. I'd like to dig into that a little bit more. And first of all, just to understand, first of all, what was it, if you like, triggered that desire to move from being a practitioner of IT security and risk into being in sales?
First off, you're correct. That sort of duality that was there is definitely part of the story and certainly part of the value. But to your latter question, is the desire that was there. What it came from or what it stemmed from was to gain understanding of all aspects of technology. And it didn't necessarily have to uniquely be security. But what I found was, as I was doing development, as I was creating systems, as I was implementing things, I noticed that I was working with different partners, different teams, implementers, different software companies, different vendors. And what I didn't necessarily understand was sort of their perspective or how their journey was or how they came to be into a supplier standpoint, as well as into sort of a company standpoint. And so what I started to do was semi-personally slash professionally try to gain understanding of software design from a specific tool set standpoint. So I was designing software at financial services companies to protect our customers, to protect our interests and mitigate our risk. Right. And one of the things that I would do is I would use third-party providers to help me do that, right? Because I couldn't do it all myself and I didn't know how to write a RACF system for a mainframe, right? So why not just go buy one that exists? And what I found was, you know, oftentimes there was these giant players in the space, your IBMs, your Ciscos, your Microsofts, and those sort of things. And then a bunch of these nimble little companies that were just coming up to solve niche problems and to uniquely and agilely be there to help with a business problem. And that's really what intrigued me, was that somebody could have an idea, use it, implement from nothing, just be like, you know what, I really want to solve multi-factor authentication and nobody does this well. And I'm just going to design a multi-factor authentication company, and boom, Duo Mobile comes out and is worth $2 billion when Cisco acquires them straight out of the Midwest, right? From Michigan. Like, how does that happen? And my desire to understand that is what led me to the software sales side of things, because I could design and I could build a system. But my designing and building of the systems was specifically germane to our financial services customers' problem. Wouldn't it be neat to design a system that would be used by any industry, any company, anywhere to solve a security problem? And that's sort of personal curiosity is what led me to be like, let's go down this provider's standpoint or the vendor standpoint and just see what's there.
So when you moved from BMW Financial Services, how different did you find the reality of being in sales from what you had perceived it might be like?
Yeah. So let's double click on that, because I went from being an architect to kind of being an operational sales manager. Now, the operational sales manager piece was my final role at BMW, as my final form, but that wasn't where I started. I was employee number like 11 or 9, depending on which system you looked at. And so I did engineering. I did some product management. I did some operational sort of design and management piece. And I even, you know, helped with some of our development from features and that sort of thing. So I was doing a lot in that role. It eventually evolved into technical selling, building a team, and then, you know, running a whole region for sales. So there was more than just hopping over and, oh, you're a salesman now. There was a little bit of an evolution there.
There are your business cards. Off you go.
Right. Yeah. Here's your business cards. No training. Just go. Go and see how this works. And so, you know, I did have to go and get training, and I did have to come to the point where I was going to decide if I wanted to pursue developing a niche security solution as a technologist, which that those career paths exist for certain, or helping customers implementing, you know, selling, right, the solution set to our customer base. And obviously we know how the story ends, right? I ultimately decided to go down that path because when I got to talk to all these different people across, you know, North America, across at the time the East Coast, it was so unique to see problems and opportunities that existed across any industry and across entire domains, and for us to be able to help solve those time and time and time again, and truly sort of develop a partnership rather than just sort of a relationship between a vendor and a company.
It's really interesting because I see a lot of, if you like, IT practitioners, people who are like, you know, systems engineers or IT security engineers, transition into being a sales engineer or a pre-salesperson, someone who is that kind of glue between the technical side and the commercial side. Right. There are very few that continue that path into out and out sales and out ultimately that sales leadership, which you've done. Okay. So a hard question perhaps to answer, but what do you think made you carry on down that route and not stop in what I think for most people would have been a more comfortable kind of terminus of sales engineering leadership?
Yeah. So I see it on my team. I mean, I hire, one of my team's responsibilities is sales engineering, and I've had that responsibility at several organizations. And I see that exact path, right? Taking somebody from a customer or a former customer that implemented our software or product, and then coming over as a sales engineer. And then, like you said, terminating or having their career be in the sales engineering realm. I won't use the word terminating. That's the wrong term there, but sort of staying in that pool as their career path, which is perfectly acceptable. And in certain instances, very lucrative as a career path. So you mentioned my alma mater, Franklin University, where I taught for 10, 11 years. That was where I got my master's in business administration. And so what I wanted to gain was true and complete ownership of that product and that relationship. And, you know, short of creating my own, which I haven't done yet, the best way to do that is to continue to gain responsibilities and to continue to add value to the relationship through from a sales perspective. I could have gone product, right? Done product design, then product architecture, then product management, and then, you know, sort of VP of product or product ownership. But my interests lie in the business aspect of software design and vendor relationships as well. And so to me, the complete augmentation of my CIS degree and my MBA was taking my CIS career and my MBA career and sort of merging them and joining and leveling up to be the ultimately the CRO here.
Right. Okay, great stuff. So you've obviously carved your own path from 100% technical through a kind of a transitional hybrid of technical and commercial, and now overwhelmingly commercial sales leadership, albeit with some kind of technical elements to it. Okay. Do you see that as something that, if you like, you are, for want of a better term, lucky to have, and perhaps maybe an ideal that someone else would come with? Or is that something that you feel is an important element of the people that you hire? So when you're looking for a new sales guy, for example, would you look for someone that perhaps has that kind of background, or would you perhaps try to bolt on other elements to someone that doesn't necessarily have it?
Yeah, I'll change your question a little bit and I'll say, what are our customers looking for? Right? What are our buyers and what are our customers looking for? And I believe the answer is that, you know, the second use case that you put there, somebody that's experienced their journey and or somebody that has that technology prowess or achievement to be able to relate, connect, and ultimately help solve the problems of our customers. It's easy for me to connect with buyers when I can say, oh, you know, when I was responding to audits, or, you know, State of New York sent a bunch of auditors out, and, you know, they were all up in our applications and our documentation, which didn't exist because nobody documents anything until like the day before. And when I was doing that, and it's easy to see that connection, be like, oh, okay, you get it, right? You can empathize with what I'm going through. You know, you being the customer to me, you know that I don't just have this problem. I've got 30 other problems that I need to help work on and solve. And I think that that sort of empathy or that connection with the buyer's plight and with the customer's problems is something that they're looking for. So when I'm hiring or I'm looking for the next person to come and work on my team, it's not, you know, somebody that's been in traditional sales their whole life or their whole career. While that's valuable and while that's certainly something that can work at certain organizations for our teams and our customers, what they're looking for is somebody that can empathize and relate to their journey. So we look for that experience as part of it.
Right. Okay. So I want to just sort of jump in on one of the things that we talked about a little earlier about your time at Fishmate. Okay.
Yeah.
Now Cofans, right? While you were there, you more than doubled their customer base, okay?
Right.
So clearly, you've got some real sales chops, right? So I would imagine that, again, when you're either hiring or certainly managing your team, you're looking for people to emulate the success that you've clearly had yourself. What was the secret sauce that led you to doubling Fishmate's customer base? And how would you look for that in your own team now at Rangeforce?
Yeah. So Fishmate was in a unique position at the time because it was the right product, right place, right time. And so the security awareness space now, very commoditized. If a company like that were to come along today, it wouldn't have nearly the same go-to-market model. It wouldn't have nearly the same value to the customer. It would just be completely different, right? And so back in 2010, 2011, this was certainly the right solution at the right time. And there weren't very many players in that space at all. And Fishmate/Cofans was the tip of the sword that was sort of defining that market. So that's something that I saw, which is one of the reasons that I went there, right? I had implemented the software at BMW. I saw that it was valuable. I saw that it solved business needs. I talked to other peers in the industry and they said, yeah, that's a great idea. We should do something like that. That's really neat. I'd never heard of that. And I recognized that that was valuable. And so when I'm looking to build out the team or do something like that, I don't necessarily naively think that everybody has that same, you know, market opportunity, go-to-market strategy, everything's sort of aligned and built out.
Sorry to jump in, but you still needed to take advantage of that market opportunity.
Right. And it was still competitive.
You did that. I mean, there may have been other people that were presented with similar sorts of opportunities, you know, the right product, the right place at the right time, albeit in maybe different areas, but you did it. A lot of other people don't.
Right. If I were to counsel someone or even myself back or now, right? If you're looking at evaluating something, if you're looking at going to something, does the market justify this, right? Is this something that the market is asking? I tend to boil it down to something simple to say, is it a vitamin or is it a painkiller? If it's a vitamin or a vitamin, depending on how you say it, all it does is it could make you better. It could not. It's not really FDA approved or proven. And all these statements, you know, they could be true. If it's a painkiller, if it's something that solves an ailment or an issue, that's something that's a little bit more valuable. And really taking that and sort of applying it to the solution that you're looking at or implementation is truly an easy high level filter to apply to something.
Right. Okay. But then again, there are lots of people that work for lots of companies that sell to use your analogy, painkillers, mm-hmm. but very few of them go on to double an organization's customer base.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
What was your secret sauce?
Yeah, absolutely. So twofold. One was directly demonstrating the value through my implementation, right? So coming and saying to people with whom I was having a discussion with, look, I implemented this and I've seen this work and I've seen what doesn't work and I understand what you're going to come up against. And I know, you know, what you're going to see if you were to try something like this from a program standpoint was something that really, really resonated, right? Goes back to our discussion on sitting in the chair, right? Have you sat in my chair and do you know the pains that I know or see on a day-to-day basis? So going beyond just the technology, right? Because there's so many shiny technologies and so many great things that could potentially solve all sorts of problems, but there's people behind. There's steering committees, there's perception, there's policies that have to go into place. There's production windows. There's all sorts of things that stand-up meetings and release cycles and all sorts of things that your product has to fit into. And if you don't understand that, you're not going to get success in the product. You might get a sale once, but you want a sale 3 times, 5 times, right? You want the same customer when they move their job in 2 years to take your product with them. And I'm at company X, now I'm at company Z, and I'm going to bring the same company with the same solution stack with me. And the way that you build that is by one, being a painkiller, but two, understanding and providing that value that goes well beyond just the technology need and to understand that whole program piece. Now, the second, I said there were two parts. The second part to it is the marketing, right? You can't ignore the fact that you have to get your message out there and you have to get your message out in a way that is quick, consumable, and easy to be done. We at FishMe had Vanessa Bush. Jamie's been married, so her last name was Spalding at the time, but we had a great marketing team that was working with sales hand in hand in unison to generate the proper message and to generate the appropriate message for our team. And that resonated really, really well. And we got a lot of opportunities to talk about our value because of the marketing piece that we had tied with it.
Right. Okay, great. And given your success at FishMe, when you now are hiring people, what key things, whether it's in terms of their background, their experience, what key things do you look for? Okay. And then my next question, which I'll give you a bit of a plot spoiler for, is going to be, how do you measure or identify that when you
interview? Yeah, that second question is fundamentally key to identify someone, but I'll answer the first one first, what you're looking for. So in addition to looking for, you know, connectability, personal ability to speak to somebody and being able to build a rapport with somebody, you want to understand their background, right? You want to have a good understanding of where they've come from, what they've done, what they've achieved and accomplished. And I don't mean looking at just sales numbers and looking at just achievement quarter over quarter, because depending on the salary range, you're going to get A players or A minus players, top tier candidates to be evaluated. Do those people understand the buyer's journey? Do they follow a sales process? And do they understand the technology, right? And more importantly, do they understand the value of the technology? So I can understand this cell phone, right? I know that it uses a CDMA banded signal to connect to a tower. And then that puts a call to a satellite or a network system of towers and my phone call goes through, right? But do I understand the value of what that phone call can do? Talking to grandma, talking to my children, making a business deal, all those sorts of things. This phone brings me so much more value than the $900 or whatever that I paid for it, right? And if I'm able to convey that value in something, that makes it so much more easy and relatable, and I will buy from you-able that we will see and that we almost require of candidates that we work with. Now, the second piece of that is going through and ensuring that the ability of those people and the claims, I guess I'll say, made by the people with whom we're working are true and can be backed up. So at Rangeforce, one of the things that we have the ability to do is give a free license and have somebody prove what they say with using our software. And so one of the things that I do is I mandate before somebody gets to me. So after the HR interview with Amanda, she's fantastic at finding great candidates and screening them. I ask that they go into our platform and use our free community edition. And when they get to me, I ask them to take me through and walk me through and see what they've done in their community edition, right? And that helps me understand then, one, if they've done their homework, right? Two, if they get the product, and three, if they've used it enough to see if it's something that, now you can't do that with every, if you're working for Palo Alto, I can't ship you a $50,000 Palo Alto box for you to install, configure, and work with, right? But I can get an understanding of if you know what the value of the product is and how to best promote that product or solution set to the customer through questions and answers and all that sort of screening process. So we use our own technology and we eat our own dog food with our screening and our interviewing process. Others might not be able to, but we certainly get a lot out of seeing how much or how little you interact with our solution set.
Primarily about looking to see how clearly somebody can identify what the genuine value proposition is, rather than just feed, speeds, features, just understanding what the genuine value proposition is and how they can then articulate it.
Yeah, I mean, reading a list of features is something that marketing can do any day, all day, right? And that's their job and that's their function for sure. But understanding, you know, and applying what those features are and how they fit into your environment and if they stack up to your tech stack. I'll go back to my time at FishMe, and there were times when I would say, you know, I don't think this product is right for you. And at first, you know, I was sitting with a partner at dinner when I said that and the partner, his jaw dropped. He was like, what? Why are you saying that this product isn't right for them? But the reality is, you know, I was able to assess that they weren't anywhere near where they needed to be maturity-wise in their program to implement something like this, and would just cause them more headaches and they wouldn't renew the next year. Well, fast forward like 2.5-3 years later, that customer came back and we implemented and we had a great relationship. So to be able to see that and to be able to identify that is something that isn't often common, but is certainly something that we look for to have that full understanding or perspective of our solution set.
Okay, great stuff. So if somebody was just now starting out in sales leadership, mm-hmm. or if you had the ability to kind of go back in time and whisper into your own ear as you were just sort of starting out, what 3 tips would you give to someone in that?
Yeah. First and foremost is understand who you're working for. And I don't mean who signs your paycheck, but what I mean is understand that your paycheck is provided to you by your employer, fine, but you're working for your customer. And you, Aaron, has a reputation. I'm not going to work for the same company in 10 years from now. I'm not. I might have 2 other jobs by then. And if I solely am going after the paycheck and I solely am going after, you know, for sell range force, that's doing a disservice to Aaron's brand or Aaron's relationship with his customers, right? And so just understand that you're working for your customers. And if you're at Rangeforce and Rangeforce can help provide the value for your customers, perfect. That's why you're here and that's what you're doing. But don't go promoting something that is just for a paycheck or just for a commission check. That's not something that you want to do. 2, right? Fail quickly. Try things. This is something that's easily said and done, but try things, fail fast and learn from them. Don't try to continually beat things into submission or make something that has failed successful. Let it fail, be done with it, move on and go to the next idea. And then, you know, kind of to that end, I'd say hire slowly, fire fast. Getting to the point where you're evaluating somebody can take time. I don't mean put them through 9 interviews and 15 weeks of stuff. No. I just mean take your time when you're hiring. But if something has failed, fail quickly, right? Fire fast, right? Get to the point where you're saying, it's not going to work out. This isn't a good relationship. We're not getting to the right place. We think we should move you to a different part of the organization, or, you know, we should part ways. Definitely do that, as it'll be very much more costly to learn that lesson 6-8 months down the road.
Great stuff. So tell me about Rangeforce. What was it about Rangeforce that attracted you, and people who might be listening to this potentially could get value from Rangeforce? Tell me a little bit about it.
Yeah. So let's go back to my own criteria, right? Is it a vitamin or is it a painkiller? My belief is that it's a painkiller. We have a cybersecurity skills gap in cyber, right? I mean, 1.5 million, 150,000, whatever number you want to use, there are unfilled positions and roles that are happening. And what Rangeforce does is it helps solve that problem. We give away free licenses to our community edition. We also give away free licenses to nonprofit organizations. One of them is a veterans placement group called Seven Eagle Group. And they take veterans who are transitioning out of armed forces work and into the private sector, and they train them, right? Well, they use Rangeforce to train them. We get, you know, these people come in about 6 months before their discharge, and they go and they get jobs and they get badges and they get certified. They get all sorts of stuff and value from our product. And to see that and to understand that we are solving actual problem, we're a painkiller. We're filling the roles that are sitting there unfilled for 3 months, 6 months, a long time. And we're improving the lives of our customers through just visibly seeing somebody get smarter, get a promotion, get a new job, or go somewhere else because they've learned and leveled up and got more out of our software than they could out of a book, or out of a, you know, 3-day training class or a 5-day training class or anything like that, was the reason that I came here, and truly is what I believe is valuable for prospects and customers. Because like I said, we have a free version that's available for anybody to try out and look at, and you'll see if it's right for you or if it's not something that's valuable in any way.
And if somebody wanted to take advantage of that free version, where can they find it?
Yeah, it's just on our website under the Resources tab, Community Edition.
Okay, great.
Rangeforce.com.
I'll make sure there's links to that in the show notes. So, Aaron, how can people find out more about you, or if they want to reach out, how can they do that?
Sure. You know, I'd be happy to connect with anyone via LinkedIn, or you could email me at aaron.ansari@rangeforce.com. Happy to talk to somebody. We do information security days with our customers. We go and do events kind of all over the country and the world, really, in Europe and the Middle East as well. So I would be happy to come support any initiative that you have or talk to you about your information security needs.
That's great. Aaron Ansari, Chief Revenue Officer of Rangeforce. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Conference Room.
Truly my pleasure. Thanks, Simon.
Coming up next week on the Conference Room, I'll be talking to Vice President of Global Sales of Skyline ATS, Mark Strutner.
If you start to get the rest of the company involved with it as well, we have marketing campaigns. Well, we track those as well. How many of them actually hit the forecast? How many of them, you know, actually are pipeline? How many of them actually close? What's the timing between when we ran that campaign and when that deal actually closed? We could start to cherry pick the top campaign that worked in, say, the East Coast and deploy that in the West Coast and get that thing filled with a high confidence level there.
Thanks so much for listening. Make sure you visit our website, theconferenceroompodcast.com, where you can find all the show notes, plus links to the resources mentioned during the podcast. If you enjoyed listening to this, make sure you subscribe so that you're always the first to know when each episode is released. Also, please take the time to review the podcast so the more people who want to grow their businesses can find us. To talk about this or any other podcast, or in fact anything business related whatsoever, find me on Twitter at Simon Lader. Or you can find me by searching for Simon Lader or Cilicia Academy on Facebook or on LinkedIn. I'm always open to a conversation. Thanks for listening to the Conference Room. Until next time, keep talking.